Roll call.
Roll call for Friday, January 16th. Senator Anderson, District 2.
Here.
Senator Anderson, 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstetter.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Escobel.
Here.
Geis.
Excuse.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks. Johnson,
here.
Kinski,
here.
Landon,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Pappas,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Fladern,
here.
Wasserberger,
here.
President Nicholas,
here.
29 present, 1 excused.
Prayer by Father Spaulding.
For inspiration this day, we turn to Sir Francis Drake. Disturb us, Lord, when we are too well pleased with ourselves, when our dreams have come true because we have dreamed too little, when we have arrived safely because we sailed too close to the shore. Disturb us, Lord, when with the abundance of things we possess, we have lost our thirst for the waters of life. Having fallen in love with life, we have ceased to dream of eternity, and in our efforts to build a new earth, we have allowed our vision of the new heaven to dim. Disturb us, Lord, to dare more boldly, to venture on wider seas, where storms will show your mastery, where losing sight of land, we shall find the stars. We ask you to push back the horizons of our hopes and to push into the future in strength, courage, hope, and love. God of all things, as we gather this day, we ask that you free us from the comfortability of partisan alliance, that you remove the worry in our hearts of public opinion, and that you give us courage this day to act boldly, to work for the good of your creation, and to have the courage to find those new shores where new life can be found. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right.
We're at that point of business for the approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of January the 15th, 2015, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jeff Wasserberger, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. New businesses. We have a doctor of the day. It's Dr. Jasper Chen. I don't see him here yet. And we have a nurse for the day is Heidi Mueller with the Wyoming Medical Center. We'll see them. Maybe when they show up, we'll talk to them. Today in Wyoming history, UW's Hall of Agriculture was dedicated in 1915. Thought for the day is there's only one way to avoid criticism. Do nothing, say nothing, and be nothing. Aristotle. All right, that takes us to the reports from standing committees.
January the 16th, 2015, Mr. President, to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 31, Department of Health Reports Cleanup, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Bills on second reading. Senate File 32. Senate File 32, second reading, Senator Scott.
Mr. President,
this was laid back a day to look into a situation that we discovered. Basically, what's happening, this is relating to the federal enactment, the ACA, and how do you mesh our small group plans with that. What's going on is that in this bill, we're giving, let me back up, when the small group coverage was first enacted, and I believe the date, Mr. President, was 1992, it was designed to provide employees, their spouses, and their dependents with a guarantee issue program, so if they moved from one job to another, they could get insurance coverage and weren't locked into an existing employer plan where they had coverage, but if they left it, they would lose all coverage. It has served that purpose well, but since the federal enactment, the ACA, there's a difficulty. The cost of the insurance has gone up quite a bit over the years, and particularly with some of the mandates in that federal legislation. Many of the employers are providing coverage for their employees, and this requires they offer coverage for the spouse and dependents. Quite a number of them are offering the coverage, but at the full cost that it costs them to add those people to the policies, and people simply can't afford it. The design in the federal enactment is that such people who can't afford their coverage would then go through the exchanges on the ACA and be eligible for the federal subsidies there, but they're precluded by the specific language of the ACA if they are offered private insurance anywhere else. We're compelling them to be offered here, and so those people are out in the cold. And what this bill does is says the employer doesn't have to offer that coverage, removes that mandate, because there is this other option. And once the mandate's removed, if the employer says, if the employer continues to provide coverage, as my firm does, for everybody, and pays for it, no problem. That can continue. But if the employer is going to charge full coverage for the spouse and the kids, this removes that requirement that they do that, and then those people will be eligible to go to the exchanges and get taken care of. Now, Mr. President, the concern was there's a group that was just plain left out in the cold here. And that was the children of a single parent. And if there is no way they can get coverage from the exchange because there is no policy offered in the exchange that would cover just children. They're too expensive here. And Mr. President, if I had to describe what was happening to them, I would be describing a little round object with a point and a slot, but I think the description might not be parliamentary. They've got a real problem. And that problem is both with the small employees of small group insurance, which is what this bill deals with, and with people whose employer is a large employer and not covered by this act. So we can't germanely in this bill reach that group. It turns out that our Wyoming uninsurable pool has a program that is useful for this group, can be used for this group. We've got a bill on that on the renewal sunset date in committee. We laid it back till next Wednesday to see if it needs amendments to accommodate that, but that's the place to accommodate that. Now, I would point out on a second issue here, this is a guarantee issue program, and we are modifying it slightly. Guarantee issue program does have costs. Most of those costs are paid for by it raises the price to everybody who's getting small group insurance. There is a program that we've got where they can lay some of the really high risks off into what's called the WISER pool. That's not been much used. Most of the companies in the state don't use it. That is funded with an assessment against other companies and can be deducted from the premium tax. It's not a big factor here, but the small group program is not entirely cost-free because you do pay for it in higher small group rates, and we put some parameters on that. But we can't go too far or you induce a death spiral in the whole thing, and it does have this other program involved. This bill won't affect that in a substantial way, which, as you understand the whole sweep of health insurance, know that's going on here. Mr. President, if there are any questions, I can answer them on a second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bebout, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
President, just a question to be sure I understand. I appreciate that presentation and explanation. But for small groups, you know, you've taken away the mandatory thing for spouse, but that does not preclude them from offering it to the spouse. They still have the ability to either offer it or they can go through the exchange. But on the children, they can still offer it to. If you have a single parent working for you, you can still bring their children in under the group as a voluntary thing. You're not precluding them from doing that. It's just not. The mandatory part is in limbo as far as the children's concerned, correct?
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to thank the good chairman and the members of the committee for looking into this. It was a concern that I had where there was a group that was clearly falling through the cracks on the intent of what this legislation did. So with the legislation, there's a group that falls through the cracks. Without the legislation, there's a larger group that falls through the cracks, unfortunately. So it's a bit of a catch-22, and I appreciate the chairman finding another alternative means of addressing that through the Wyoming high-risk insurance pool, and we'll look forward to that legislation. So at this point, I support the legislation, encourage the body to adopt it, and look for a further solution for the group that is still not covered after we implement this.
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, in answer to the question, this bill gives the employer flexibility. You can choose to cover, you can choose to provide family coverage. I think theoretically you can choose under this to provide coverage for not spouses but for dependents and solve the problem that way. But you've got to do it the same across all the employees. And it may be, and I think very frequently is, that the policies that are available are employee coverage with an option for family coverage, which would assume a second adult there and the way they're structured. So just offering it for the dependent children may not be a practical solution for many of the employers, and you have to do it for everybody. Your group is either one way or the other. But this enables, and I think a lot of the larger small employers will take the option of saying, you're just going to offer employee coverage, and spouses and kids go to the exchange, but if it's just kids, there's nothing on the exchange, and it turns out we do have this other option in the WHIP pool, the Wyoming, the uninsurable pool, that does cover this, and it may be that all we need to do is tweak it a little. We may not even need to tweak it, we may just need to publicize it. But we do need to extend the sunset, and that bill will be before us separately.
Senate File 32 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 49, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 49, Initiative and Referendum Revisions.
No amendments, no discussion. Senate File 49, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 52, second reading.
Senate File 52, Election Vote Centers and Electronic Poll Books.
Senator Case.
There was a question on page 14 of this bill about the striking the language that said poll books within a precinct shall first be made to agree before any votes are counted. And when the poll books agree, that language was struck. It was a great question by the majority floor leader. The reason we don't need that language anymore is that it used to be that each precinct had two poll books, and then you did a matching up. They were handwritten or printed out poll books, and there was a matching up at the end. Now it's all electronic. There's no matching procedure. It is correct. I mean, this doesn't have anything to do with it being correct or not, but you don't need to do this matching between two physical books, and so that's kind of archaic language now. And I'm sorry I didn't know the answer to that yesterday.
Any further discussion? There being none. Senate File 52, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. I think we've got our nurse of the day. Is it Heidi Mueller? Is that right? Thank you. Well, thank you for being here. Let's all give her a welcome.
Hear, hear.
It hurts when I do this.
Don't do that. All right. Bills on third and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list, and I move the third reading consent list, which is as follows. Senate File 10, Education Administration. Senate File 13, Method of Execution. Senate File 16, Controlled Substances. Senate File 20, School Finance, Excess Mill Levy Rebate. Senate File 22, Landfill Remediation Priority List. And Senate File 23, Enhanced Oil Recovery Commission Amendments.
Are there any adjustments to the third reading list? If not, will the reading clerk please read the third reading consent list? Is that right? Who does? I'm looking at my cheat sheet here. I'll figure it out here in about an hour. Ellen will do. Okay.
On the consent list, Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
I think we have to read the list in, don't we? That's what I thought. Or do I refer? Maybe I read it. Okay. All right. The third reading consent list is as follows. Senate File 10, Education Administration. Senate File 13, Method of Execution. Senate File 16, Controlled Substances. Senate File 20, School Finance, Excess Mill Levy Rebate. Senate File 22, Landfill Remediation Priority List. Senate File 23, Enhanced Oil Recovery Commission Amendments. Are there any requests to remove any of the bills from the consent list? If not, the reading clerk will please call the roll on. What am I doing wrong?
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. President. I think I made a mistake.
You think I should have asked for either way? There's nobody's requested. I've read the list. I think we're ready to call, and then we'll work out the details for the next time. But we have the list read in. I think we're now ready for a roll call. Yes, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
We are. We're ready to go.
Roll call on the list.
On the consent list, Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis excused. Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
On the consent list, 29 aye, 1 excused.
Thank you. It's actually amazing if you look at, there's another instructions. I was reading the wrong instructions. There's too many instructions up here. It's like an airplane. All right.
Senate File 10. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 10. 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 13, are there any changes? Rothfuss, aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Cooper, aye to no. Kraft, aye to no. Johnson, aye to no. Wasserberger, aye to no. Ross, aye to no. Escobel, aye to no.
Nicholas, aye to no.
Nicholas, aye to no. Hastert, aye to no.
Anderson District 2, aye to no.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 13, 17 aye, 12 no, 1 excused. Senate File 16, are there any changes? Rothfuss, aye to no. Hastert, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 16, 24 aye, 5 no, 1 excused. Senate File 20, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 20. Senator Dockstetter, you were conflict on this vote, is that correct? No. Thank you. Senate File 20, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 22, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 22, 29-I, one excused. Senate File 23, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 23, 29-I, one excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate Files 10, 13, 16, 20, 22, and 23 have passed the Senate. That's it, isn't it? Are there any more? It's now our general file. Consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we have at that order, we're at that order of business for bills on general file. Do you have a motion?
Mr. President?
Yes.
Just 1 second. I believe one of our colleagues wants privilege of the floor.
Well, thank you. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Mr. President, I've been asked to discuss a little bit our protocol on the use of the names of senators during the proceedings here, because we're starting to stray on that issue. And it's particularly an issue that occurs in general file. It is the provision in Mason's and longstanding parliamentary provision is that we shouldn't use proper names in debate on the floor, because we don't want to get into personalities. We don't want to set up personal confrontations, and that helps ease that. However, it has long been the custom that when the chairman of the committee of the whole calls on somebody, you do so by name. That's always been the way it's done. And it is important to do that in this day and age, especially because these proceedings are going out on a live feed, and that helps people who are listening to us know who's talking and follow what's going on. Also, when a committee chairman introduces a bill, if they don't explain it themselves, they will yield by name to another, either the sponsor of the bill usually, or if it's a committee bill, another member of the committee who will explain it. And those have always been the way we do things. And again, that's important because of our live feed. So don't use euphemisms like the tall senator from Natrona County or something like that. That confuses your audience on the feed as to what's going on and who does it. The other time we have used names referring to people, and we probably trespass a bit on general procedure when we do it, is, and it'll be a particular issue when we get to the budget and some of the complicated things, you will refer to amendments that were made previously as the thus so-and-so's amendment. And that's just a matter of convenience in identifying what you're talking about. We have routinely done that. But otherwise, when you're in debate, it's probably permissible to say, answering Senator so-and-so's question, this is the answer. But beyond that, do not use the names of senators. State your proposition without doing that. So, and Mr. Chairman, we were starting to use the euphemistic references to people in from the chair in the committee of the whole and in the yielding, and that does cause problems partly because it confuses the listeners on the live feed that goes out from there. So, Ms. Chairman, unless somebody has something further on that, I thank you for the privilege of the floor to deal with this particular issue. Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Senator Scott. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, support general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole to discuss one bill on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion is carried. Senator Driscoll, would you please approach the desk? All right.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 24. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 24, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority Amendment, sponsored by the Minerals Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Cole, Cooper, Roth, Fuss, Von Fladeren, Senator Von Fladeren, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Excuse me, Senator Von Fladeren.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with the due pass recommendation on Senate File 24, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority Amendments. And we have, Mr. Chairman, I will explain, we had this bill on Committee of the Whole and it was laid back. So we're bringing it back forward. There was some comments from people that they were unhappy with parts of the bill. We do have an amendment, and I'd ask that the amendment be read in at this time.
Will the reading clerk read the amendment?
Senate File 24, Committee of the Whole, corrected copy. Senate File 24, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 1.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 24, the corrected copy, and will explain that myself. Senator, is what this does is it goes down to, on page one in the title, it deletes increasing the bonding because we are going to, through this amendment, on page two, lines 15 through 17, we're going to reinstate the $1 billion in bonding, and we're going to strike the new language, which is $3 billion, and the numerical writing of that. So that's all this amendment does. I'll take this question, try to answer questions, and ask for the vote on Committee of the Whole Number 1, Senate File 24.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Von Flattern's motion to adopt the Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 24, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion has passed. All those in favor of Senate File... Excuse me. We are back on the bill. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, okay, so we have reduced the bonding authority back to what it was. So now with the Committee of the Whole amendment in there, now what does this bill do?
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill originally did two things. One was to increase that bonding authority level to the $3 billion. The other which was the far more critical aspect that was asked for by the infrastructure authority, was the fact that we directed them last year through legislation to look at coal export terminals and other out-of-state activities. So we gave them that responsibility in statute, but as it turned out, in this provision of statute, they couldn't really use their tools, so to speak, outside of the state. So they requested that we conform the legislation to allow them to use those revenue bonds and the issuance thereof on projects that were located outside the state of Wyoming. The previous language you can see on lines 12 and 13, page 2, indicated that those facilities and related infrastructure shall be located at least partially within Wyoming, which up until that change in mission for the infrastructure authority was perfectly reasonable because all of the projects that they would have worked on would have been at least partially in Wyoming. Since we changed their objective to include this concept of ports and exports of Wyoming products, at that point there was the possibility of having to use it on a project that did not partially exist in the state of Wyoming, and that was really the heart of the request for what they wanted. So with the amendment, we drop out the first portion of raising the cap on the bonds, but we still are going to trying to change the consistency of the language to conform with last year's amendment to their objectives.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we keep on the floor here and in the argument for this bill, we keep hearing that what we have in mind are the ports in Washington. Are those specifically stated? I have two questions. Are those specifically stated in current statute, or can the Infrastructure Authority, would this authorize the Infrastructure Authority to issue bonds for some other project completely unrelated to ports or export of coal, and would they have the final authority to do that, or would this would that question come back before this body again to look at any specific project?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not a sponsor on this bill. I'm not on the committee, but I was interested in that, and I do have it in front of me, so I can answer that question. And then if somebody on the committee who wants to call me all wet, if somebody on the committee wants to call me all wet, they certainly can do that, and no one's hesitated to do that in the past either. But the statute that's by reference to a different statute that's not in the bill, but the current statute, which is the 375303A, the purpose for which these bonds can be passed are the purpose for which the authority is created is to diversify and expand the Wyoming economy through improvement in the state's electric and energy transmission infrastructure and to facilitate the consumption of Wyoming energy by planning, financing, constructing, developing, acquiring, maintaining, and operating electric transmission facilities, advanced coal technology facilities, coal distribution facilities, including ports, advanced energy technology facilities, and related supporting infrastructure and undivided or other interests therein, and facilitate the transmission of energy. So it's the broad language. It's the general purpose for which the authority is instructed. That's what the statute says, and somebody can amplify on that if they want. Mr. Chairman, in light of and continue some of the discussion we had the other day on this bill, I did have, since we laid this back, I have had conversations with the treasurer and taking into heart our senior senator from Laramie County's discussion the other day. What message do we send? And I wanted to, at least from my perspective, I wanted to have in the record, as though far down on the record it will be as the discussion on getting to the whole is, I want at least on the record that I believe this message is not to the Wyoming treasurer that he would buy these bonds and thereby revenue bonds, which would not be an obligation or otherwise obligation to the state. If he buys them, obviously, if the state's holding the bonds and when we default, we have held the bag on the thing. So I wanted to make sure that we talk about this, that the collateral, and I believe that the way that these things work, if these bonds would go, and I don't know that they would be marketable, Mr. Chairman, in that form, but the security for these would be the facilities and the ports themselves. And I wanted to just have on the record at least And if somebody else thinks the message is different, they should probably stand up and say it. But I wanted to have on the record, Mr. Chairman, that the message is not to the treasurer that he would be the buyer of these bonds, and that the Senate, at least from my perspective, and this senator, and I hope it would be the message of this Senate, is that by passing this bill, it is not an instruction to the treasurer to depart from his investment policies, or to the SLIB board, or request or direction to the SLIB board that they would depart from their investment policies and buy bonds for coal ports under this project. That doesn't prohibit them from participating if it's an appropriate investment in part for their investment portfolio. But certainly, I would hope that the message is not that we would turn and expect the treasurer to use permanent home trust funds or the permanent funds of the state to buy and hold these bonds and take on all the risk of financing coal ports. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cooper.
Chairman, and the good senator from the central part of the state is absolutely correct. There is no obligation by the treasurer of this state to purchase any of these bonds. These bonds can be sold on the open market just like any other revenue-type bonds that are out there. And so I just want to reiterate that.
Ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Von Flattern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with favorable recommendation of Senate File 24, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 24 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, you do such a wonderful job. That's probably a record for Committee of the Whole, and I want everybody up in the northeastern part of the state to remember that. Mr. Chairman, I move that Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Christensen, take a picture of me while I'm here. Come on, I want a picture. Get your phone out. Is that out of order?
I think it was out of order, but not because of the process. Here we go.
I have to read it in.
Go ahead. Reading clerk, please read the bill in.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration a bill on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 24, do pass amended. Senator Driscoll, Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. President,
I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That motion has been adopted. Folks, just for a minute, you'll receive today an invitation to the governor's prayer breakfast. You're all encouraged to participate, and it takes a little bit of planning because you have to send in an RSVP by February 2nd. There's a cost that they've asked you to send in, but it takes a lot of work for the governor's office to put these together, and the attendance hasn't been that great the last few years, and so we ought to show some support for the process, the governor, and joint prayer. So I'd ask you to really take a look at that. Don't take that list or that request out, if you will, and set it aside. Remind yourself to send the money in. We'll remind you when the prayer breakfast comes up, so we'll get better attendance this year. Introduction of Senate files. Senate File 77, first reading.
Senate File 77, Ignition Interlock License Amendment, sponsored by Senator Perkins.
Senate File 77 is being assigned to Committee Number 1. Senate File 82, first reading.
Senate File 82, Funeral Services Practitioners Act Amendment, sponsored by Senator Scott.
Senate File 82 is being assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Senate File 78, first reading.
Senate File 78, Education Dual Language Immersion Programs, sponsored by Senator Wasserberger.
Senate File 78 is being assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate Joint Resolution 5, first reading.
Senate Joint Resolution 5, State Superintendent of Public Instruction 1, sponsored by the Education Committee.
Senate Joint Resolution 5 is assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 80, first reading.
Senate File 80, Trespassing to Collect Data, Civil Cause of Action, sponsored by Senator Hicks.
Senate File 80 is assigned to Committee Number 5, Ag. Senate File 76, first reading.
Senate File 76, Railroad Safety, sponsored by Senator Emmerich.
Senate File 76 is assigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senate File 81, first reading.
Senate File 81, Lifesaver Program 2, sponsored by Senator Johnson.
Senate File 81 is assigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senate Joint Resolution 4.
Senate Joint Resolution 4, Constitutional Convention, sponsored by Senator Peterson.
Senate Joint Resolution 4 is assigned to Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedure. Clear the desk. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. Oh, before we go to that, we'll give privilege of the floor to Chairman Ross to discuss a little bit about the fiscal profile that's come out today.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, you've received today the Craig Report. It should be on your desk. And, of course, the goldenrod for the fiscal profile as a result of the new Craig Report. I will do my best to try to explain these, and we'll call upon the Vice Chairman, Senator Perkins, also to assist, along with former Chairman of Appropriations, and perhaps even you, Mr. President, to help me explain where we're at right now. But if you go to your Craig report, and you go to page 2 of the Craig report, under the heading Bottom Line General Fund Budget Reserve Account, you will see that as a result of the price of oil and natural gas, but primarily oil, that we find ourselves in a deficit as we start out this supplemental budget session. What you find is that you have about $217.6 million right off the bat that were in the hole. You must add to that the $4.4 million that was previously determined to be in the negative as a result of the October Craig report. So bottom line is that we're $222 million in the hole right off the bat. So if you go to your goldenrod, what you see on your goldenrod is three columns. Of course, the first column is the October Craig. And if you look down to the bottom of total traditional funds available for appropriation, you see that $4.4 million that was already a negative figure at that point in time. And then when you go to the second column, which is, of course, the governor's recs for this supplemental budget session, you will see that there is under 2015 budget general fund appropriations, governor's recs inferred, and that's something different now that is on the goldenrod with regards to the inferred, because what the governor has done is basically said, these are the projects that I'd like to fund, but didn't give us any direction necessarily as to where they came from. But in putting together this goldenrod, you will see there under that line $135,594,544. That is the inference of the governor's recs with regards to his proposed budget. The reason you see 135 is that it's presumed that the $21 million that is in the strategic investments and projects account, $21,370,296, it was presumed that that money would be taken. So in essence, what the governor has proposed is approximately $157,630 of spending. That gets you to the, when you take into consideration the current Craig report and the governor's recs, it gets you down to that, in the far right column, traditional funds available for appropriation, you see a negative figure of $323 million, almost $324 million. That presumes, of course, that we funded, or we would fund, all of the governor's recs. If you look down to the bottom part of the page, you see other projected available balances, and, of course, under there, under the SIPA, you see a zero. And that's because that's the way they've allocated this at this point in time. That will certainly be up to us to decide how we wish to, or which funds we wish to utilize. First of all, we have to dig out of the hole. You have to fund the hole first before you consider any additional spending. So you'll see that there are various accounts that do have positive amounts. If you go to the second page, under general fund, I would call to your attention that there is a line item that you don't necessarily normally see, and that is a request under the 2015 Governor's Rec Treasurer's Office Revenue Diversion of $665,000. That is for salaries, the proposed salaries that the Treasurer is suggesting, and it comes from other funds. And basically, those other funds, it's investment. It's taken out of the investments from our account, our permanent mineral trust fund, et cetera. And the reason you see it here is because technically those investments would go to the to the earnings would go to the general fund, but because it would intercept them in essence, if we approve that, you see that's negative $665,000. You also see under general fund appropriations, you see the once again the $135 million for the inferred governor's recs. With regard to the budget reserve account on page 3, you will see that there is an increase in general fund reversions to the budget reserve account of $34,330,468. That is money that we now have in the bank from reversions for the 13-14 biennium. It is our understanding as a committee that there's actually potentially some additional money out there, but it hasn't been reverted at this point in time, and we'll probably need to apply a little pressure there. With regards to the legislative stabilization reserve account, right now there is approximately $360 million that would be swept into the LSRA pursuant to our previous actions as a collective body. The auditor has broken that up into four separate sweeps, each quarter of approximately $92 million. Two of those sweeps have occurred as of this date, and there are two yet to occur in March and in the end of June. That is what you see as the $184 million, $353,888. It is possible, although not necessarily, am I recommending it, that you could intercept those sweeps. But that's what that figure of the 184 is. If you swept that, then the LSRA would stay at $1.8 billion. If not, the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account would be approximately $1.9 billion, almost $2 billion. On the SIPA, at the bottom of page 2-3, there's where you see how they've taken the SIPA money to account for the governor's rec, and so you see a negative there of $21 million. If you go to the school foundation, this is really quite complicated, and I may need some assistance from the vice chairman, but it really depends on whether or not you have excess revenues or not. At the time of the October Craig, there was excess monies in all three of the accounts, the school foundation program, the school capital construction account, and the permanent land fund. So the way in which it works is that there's additional money in the school foundation program of $74 million, that money then is transferred down to the school capital construction account. You see that under there as transfer from the school foundation program. And then there's additional money that was in there, and that money was then taken, the $107 million, and moved down to the permanent land PLF holding account. And you see that down there. So at the bottom line, in October, there was $475 million in the PLF account. However, if you go now to the far right column, because of there wasn't enough money, and it's primarily due to increased enrollment of approximately $8 million for increased enrollment, and can't remember the other portion of that. But under there, you see a transfer of $9 million, or what, that we were short, and so our property assessment, that was assessed valuation, also went down. And so you have to pull some money from somewhere else back up. And so what happens is under the PLF, you pull up $9 million back up into the school foundation program. And then this gets crazy. You have to pull some money back out of school cap down back into the PLF, which is the $11 million, almost $12 million. Bottom line is that there is $2 million excess in the PLF holding account, which is the difference between $475 million and $477 million. That excess would be, at the end of the biennium, would be swept into the Common School Permanent Land Fund account, the permanent fund. Okay, so page 5. Under, you see the permanent mental trust fund spending policy reserve account, $190 million. That is 75% of the 5% over the which is the average of the last 5 years, and that's where you have that. Of that, need to recognize that pursuant to Senate File 43 originally, there is a loan, or at least we could use a loan from this account to cover the remainder of the needs for the capital construction of $119 million. That leaves unobligated, at least at this point in time, $71 million as an unobligated balance. With regards to the water accounts, if you go to water development account number 2, you will see that the governor has recommended a transfer from general fund of $18 million into the water development 2. Also, on the Gillette-Madison pipeline, you see a zero figure in the right-hand column, and that is because there's still due out there $12.4 million that needs to be paid for to complete the Gillette-Madison water project. So the picture isn't necessarily pretty. With regards to schools, 15-16, we're approximately $57.9 million in the hole. Projected for 17-18, a $311 million hole. That does not take into account that there is rebated recapture that will occur. And there was one other component, Mr. President, besides rebated capture, that would basically hold us about even, and I can't remember what that
was. Investment earnings off the common school permanent land fund.
All right. Investment earnings off the common school permanent land fund. So the hole isn't quite as big as it appears at this point in time, but those funds we need to take that into account when we're thinking about the 17-18 budget. I hope that I've explained it. I'll ask anybody else if they wish to chime in. Mr. Vice Chairman, do you have anything further? Have I explained this?
Yes. I mean, what you have, long story short, is
when you look at these pages, they're interactive. But just to go back, and I think I might just go back and just touch on the school foundation account. Those accounts are interrelated, and what you have in the school foundation program,
I recognize Mr. Senator Perkins.
Oh, thank you. I charged off the... Thank you, Mr. President. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. President. Just to chime in a little bit and help you understand the funds flow in the, which might be the hardest one to understand, is if you go to page 4 on the school foundation program on the profile here, what you see is the school foundation program is funded by various forms of revenue that come in there. It's not general fund money in the school foundation program, but there's other dedicated severance taxes and other things that come in to the school foundation program. We have set there'll always be in this thing a total available balance when you're done of $100 million. So when you start over again, that it's never back at zero. So as you go through and you look at the different forms of revenue that come in and other places, what happens when you look at all the expenditures out, there's a certain amount. If there's any excess, then it rolls down and is forced down into the capital construction account. And so if you go to, if you look on the top, in the top section underneath where it says school foundation program, then you have beginning balance revenues. At the bottom of that first section, you see the second to last line, you see transfer to school CapCon. And so that number is basically kind of a plug number. If it's whatever's in there, if there's any excess, it's going to be forced out and go down to school CapCon so that it can continue to help fund school construction. And so you see simply, you know, before we thought we had that when we, in the October Craig, there was a 74.866.225 million there. If you look down below, you'll see that down to the school's capital construction account. If you look down at revenues under the school capital construction accounts, you'll see the same number, 74,866,25. That's where that was thought that would be the excess, and so that was forced down to augment the school capital construction. So the effect of the Craig in the current biennium, when you go to the far right column, when you take into account the governor's recs, which the governor's already made, he made in his speech and some other things, you see that with the adjustments there, that you are that you actually have a zero, that there isn't anything that would transfer down to school CapCon. What you do see, though, is just above the zero under that transfer to school CapCon, you see in the top part of the foundation program, there's a zero there just above the total line. And just above that, there's $9,836,168. If you see that number, what that is coming out of the holding account. One of the things we do in the holding account is we can make up the differences that are there. So you see that there is, if you go all the way down to the bottom in the holding accounts, you see that there is a, just above the line, there's the same number, the $9,836,168. That is then so we can meet our obligations under the school foundation program that's pulled out of the holding account and put back up into the school foundation program. So again, when we're all said and done, we have the $100 million beginning and ending balance. So you see all that, and then in the right column there, when you're going into the appropriations under the school foundation program, on the far right column, you see these are the things that the governor was talking about in his in some of the different things he was doing, and so in his speech, he's making those things. So if we did everything, the right column is if we did everything the governor wanted to and did what he asked us to do in his State of the State and his recommendations to the Joint Appropriations Committee, that would be the effect. And so that's what you see in the right line. As you see, as these bills come through, as we go through the process, the left columns will start to drop off and we'll be talking about, and we'll start to profile these based upon where, once the budget markup has occurred, where those are. We'll take into consideration the other bills that have appropriations in them, whether they're in the school foundation. If they come out of the school foundation program, they'll appear here. They come out of elsewhere, they'll appear on the first page, the goldenrod, and the second page where we talk about the general fund. So this will change as it goes through, but this gives you a start. I just wanted to explain kind of how that works. These funds are interrelated. In the school capital construction account, that takes into consideration all of the current funding for which we have already approved in the biennial session. Plus, then we also, again, in the far, you see that their governor's made some recommendations, that some of which he mentioned in his speech. Those are also in there, so that those are taken into consideration in the school's capital construction account. So that's just maybe, I don't know if that's helpful, but that's just a little bit more of how those funds flow back and forth, interrelated. We kind of try and treat education as its own unit, and so we move those funds around so that they go where we can use them or where they're needed the most. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Anderson.
A question that runs in my mind is, some time back, this body made a diversion of typically education funds education funds into highway accounts. Is that diversion still in place, or has that gone away? And the other question that I have then is in regard to projections in regard to school enrollment. Any have been made?
Senator Ross.
The Craig is basically projected with regards to school enrollment, I believe it was 1%, if that answers your question. Actually, it was more than they anticipated this last year. But generally, when they do their projections, they at least the testimony before the committee today was 1% increase.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm just curious. I think the comment was about diversion of education money into highways, and I'm not really aware of that. I don't know which funds are being transferred to highways, I guess, from education to highways. I think I heard that comment.
I think Senator Bebout was ready to speak to that. I think you're talking about the diversion for the underground storage transfer fund, the LUST dollars, where we have a swap out, but I think that's probably what you're talking about. But does anybody remember right away? Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. I'm not sure what they're talking about with highway funds, and I would ask my colleague from Glen Rock to maybe rephrase that question. But to get to the question I have, which ties into your enrollment, to do the school foundation program, they've got a built-in factor on the enrollment that they add money to that. And then they also have, and that number that was presented to the JAC in a meeting we had last fall was around $21 million, or $17 million, excuse me. Then there's a roll-up that they have for their insurance that was included in the school foundation program that's about $21 million. And those increases, you know, not counting the ECA, was about $40 million. And when I look at this under the school foundation program in terms of the appropriations, the numbers that I see there go back to the October Craig. So the question is, where do those reflect in here? Because those are additional monies that now in the school foundation program that will have to be spent as we adjust. And I want to be sure that those are reflected, and I don't see them in there unless they're in the $1,494,000. But then they would have not, that can't be the case, because when we did in October, we didn't know those numbers. So either they're in there and I don't know where, or they're still coming, and that's my question, Mr. President.
Senator Perkins.
President, as far as the enrollment driven, the school foundation, if you look in the appropriation of the school foundation, my recollection from our discussion this morning was the school foundation program adjustment. There you see that was in large part by the enrollment driven. So those are the additional enrollment numbers. It was at 31, is now at 19, you see the 19,652,209 in there. That most of that was there. But then you also have in the external cost adjustment, you see the governor's full external cost adjustment that he's requested is profiled, because this is the governor's rec status, Mr. President. And so the ECA is included partly in the full ECA that the governor's asked for, which I think also included some of that was enrollment driven. I could be wrong on that, but it's you find it in two places. It's partly under the underlying two, the school foundation program adjustments, and partly in the $11,300,000 you see in the governor's rec for the external cost adjustment. It comes in both of those places, is what I remember our discussion this morning.
I don't have in front of me, but my recollection is the expenditure line was adjusted to account for current anticipated enrollment. The ECA addresses the ECA adjustment that was finally passed as it came out of JAC. Senator Bebout.
And Mr. President, everything that you just said and my colleague from Natrona County said is correct. The one thing that's missing is the group, the insurance component, and we don't need to get into the now, but I would like to have that clarification. The other thing, Mr. President, is, you know, the school capital facilities is moving through with a $27 million increase, and the governor has his request down under the school capital construction account. I think those numbers are similar, and I want to be sure we don't count those twice and that they're in there. And that was the next question, Mr. President.
Thank you. With respect to Senator Anderson, I'm not sure that we've answered your question. There is the underground storage program account, which cannot be paid for by gas tax. So there's a swap involving federal mineral royalties, and so that you do see a chart that shows dollars allocated to the education account. I'm not sure if that's the swap you're speaking of. You may, Senator Beep out.
Yeah, Mr. President, as I understand the loss, the leaking underground storage tank, that was at one time a 1 cent tax, fuel tax that was filled up and backfilled by the severance tax, and now that's totally funded by a severance tax that comes out of the severance tax revenues. And those revenues really don't have anything in terms of the school foundation program. So I'm not sure that's what Senator Anderson was getting at.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. President, I appreciate the attention that you gave to a rather ambiguous, perhaps unclear question. Being now on both education and transportation, that's an avenue that I'll pursue, and I'll come back with a better idea of what's going on. But this is something that came out of my memory from some time back. I often wonder sometimes when those diversions are made if we don't sometimes forget about them and if, in fact, that might still be in place. But I'll do that investigation on my own. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. I think we'd all be interested in knowing that answer. Senator Vibout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Just one thing I want to be sure that the body understands. If you look at your CRAG report, go back to page 3, if you would, please, members of the Senate, and you look at the oil price forecasts, and if you look at, for instance, you look at the year 2015, you see the January forecast of $50 a barrel. Be sure and understand that there's a differential out there that exists. So when you hear about the price of WTI, which is West Texas Intermediate, like today that's about $45 a barrel, give or take a few dollars, a few pennies, you have to subtract that from that, the differential that Wyoming producers receive on their crude because of the overcapacity of production in the Rockies relative to the pipelines being able to get it to the refineries. So that's really a $10 a barrel hit that we take in terms of the state's revenues based on the WTI numbers. So when you see that 50, that really means that the producer, that means that if it's 50 there, the WTI would be 60. I just want to be sure you all understand, whenever you see the price in CREG that they're talking about, when you think about WTI, remember you got to subtract that differential from WTI. The same thing happens in natural gas. If you want to really know what the natural gas price is Wyoming's getting, the statewide newspaper, go there and look at the price in Opal. And whatever that price in Opal is really the price we're getting for our natural gas, because there's been huge differentials in that between what the NYMEX price for natural gas is and what we get in Wyoming. We've done a great job of the takeaway capacity. That differential is maybe 1 or 2 pennies right now. But the differential on the oil side is very real. So be sure and remember that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, as I understand it, it's pretty important that we understand the impact of minerals. So we have the issue of present volumes, forecasted volumes, that affects what is your drilling now for forecasted and revenues. And I believe that there will be a presentation by experts in the mineral industry. Do we have that scheduled?
Thank you, Mr. President. I was going to make that announcement, or the chairman of the Joint Appropriations, or the Appropriations Committee was, but that's correct. There will be two industry representatives at noon on Monday in room 302 to give you their perspective in terms of the pricing scenarios that is for oil and gas. You know, we did this several years ago, Mr. President. Members of the Senate will remember when we had the hit in natural gas. So we brought in two experts to tell you about the long-term projections, pricing, volumes, and all of those things. And by the way, Mr. President, they were fairly accurate in terms of what we could expect and where we are. So that will be happening Monday.
So there's while I have the privilege of the floor myself, I guess I grant it myself. We're going to have a couple meetings that are designed for education next week. We've just described one being the forecast for minerals. If you have committee meetings that are meeting during that time and a conflict and you want to attend it, please talk to us, your chairman, and see if we can make some adjustments, because some of these meetings are pretty important. And if you feel like you would like to attend, we'll also have a meeting next week put on by the Labor Committee for the Medicaid expansion. And what we may do on the, with respect to that one is ask that committee chairs either move or cancel their meetings that afternoon to allow members to attend that. So the idea here is that we, with some of these big topics, that you allow your committee members to attend some of the information. Senator Burns, did you want the privilege of the floor?
Mr. President, just to advance what the majority of the leaders say, staff, during our briefing this morning, check the price of oil in Wyoming. Oil is $39 a barrel.
Any more discussion on the Goldenrod fiscal profile or the Craig report? Is there anything else that you need to do? Does that clear the floor? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that does clear the floor.
Mr. President, I move that we be adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, January 19th. And members of the Senate, just a privilege of the floor, Mr. President.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was hoping we'd get a lot more done on general file this week, but we just had a lot of things going on in committees, et cetera. But next week, we're going to really get after it. And it's the intent of your floor leader, members of the Senate, your majority floor leader, to try to get us out typically early as we can on Friday, because I know a lot of you want to travel. So if we have some longer days during the week, that's the intent. If you don't like that, don't talk to me. Talk to my wife. Thank you.
Announcements. Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number four is going to meet Monday morning at 8 o'clock, and the notice isn't out yet, but it will be this afternoon, and we'll take up Senate File 57, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, School Facilities Appropriations, and Senate File 74, Summer School Intervention and Remediation.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday morning, 8 a.m., room 302. We're going to take public testimony on Senate File 66, Medicaid Expansion Alternative. Since anything in that area, any of the other Medicaid proposals that are around are germane to that bill, we'll listen to that, too. There'll be a brief presentation, and I mean brief, on the bill itself, and then we're going to go to public testimony. The thought is to have we asked the Health Department to have somebody present to answer questions, but their presentation will come later, as you just described. We'll work that out. And this is the time for public testimony. We wanted that before we get into working the bills. We're asking any members of the public that want to testify if they will sign up with the committee secretary, committee 10 secretary, ahead of time. They'll get preference in terms of speaking time and length of time, but we'll try to hear everybody that shows up, Mr. President. So that's Monday morning, 8 a.m., room 302.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number six, travel, will meet on Tuesday, January 20th at 8 a.m. in room S14 to consider the following bill, Senate File 69, non-resident allocation of game licenses.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number eight will meet Monday evening upon adjournment to discuss the following bills, Senate File 29, Motor Vehicle Driver's License Exemptions, Senate File 27, Vietnam Veterans Welcome Home Highway Signs. Senate File 19, VIN Inspections. And if time permitted, Senate File 71, Recreation Safety Act.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, Water Resources, Fuzzy Creatures, will meet upon Tuesday upon adjournment to discuss Senate File 51, Water Development Amendments, Senate File 55, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, and Senate File 4, Dry Bean Research.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee Number 1 will be meeting on Monday morning at 8 o'clock to continue Senate File 14, Asset Forfeiture 2, Senate File 9, Right to Farm, Senate File 7, Tethering Dogs, and Senate File 11, Selling to Junk Dealers.
Dogs and junk. Senator Von Flateren.
Thank you, Mr. President. We won't take up junkyard dogs. Your committee, number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will be meeting shortly after lunch here, about 20 minutes after lunch recess break, to do Senate File 25, Cease and Transfer Priority List, Senate File 26, Challenge Loan Interest Rate, Senate File 34, Interstate Mining Compact Commission Membership, and, Mr. President, on Monday at noon, shortly after noon recess anyway, same Minerals Committee will take up Senate File 39, Industrial Siting Permit Amendments, Senate File 65, Savings and Loan Associations, Senate File 70, Cooperative Electric Utility Rate Adjustment Notice.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. President, I have a number of announcements here, Mr. President. First of all, your Senate Appropriations Committee will meet at 12:30 today to consider the following bills, Senate Joint Resolution 2, Investment of State Funds, and Senate File 17, Resident Contractor Materials Preference. After we complete our work on those two bills, we will hear re-referrals. Senate File 5, Quebec, number 1, Historic Site. Senate File 30, Camp Guernsey, Range Management Fund. And Senate File 44, Large Project Funding. On Monday morning, your Senate Appropriations Committee will hear the following bills at 8 a.m. in S11, Senate File 58, State Park Officers Benefits, Senate File 59, Wyoming Public Television Endowment Accounts, and Senate File 60, Deferred Compensation Plan Automatic Enrollment. At 9 o'clock, the Joint Appropriations Committee meeting will hear from Superintendent of Public Instruction, as previously mentioned by the Majority Floor Leader. At noon, Oil and Gas Pricing Seminar in Room 302. Upon adjournment, the JAC will hear from Mixed Martial Arts and Game and Fish presentation of the commission budget. On Tuesday of next week, governor's letters. We will be receiving the governor's letters. And Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we will begin our markup of the budget. And so, members of the committee, be prepared to be off the floor if necessary as we're doing markup on those 3 days. Other than that, we have nothing else to do.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. We've all been invited to a luncheon at the Hersler Building over the noon hour. It's sponsored by property and casualty insurers.
Are there any other announcements? Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Senate Rules Committee will have a joint meeting with the House Rules Committee in Room 302, and we were going to try to do it upon adjournment, but we'd set up for 12 o'clock, so I would assume it'll be at 12 o'clock, Mr. President, or maybe a little bit earlier if they got out of the house over there. And then as soon as that's been concluded, we will be meeting, your Senate Rules Committee will be meeting in the President's office at the conclusion of the meeting in 302.
Any other announcements? Having heard the motion, all those in favor of the majority floor leader's motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Senate shall stand in recess until 10 a.m. on Monday, January 19th.